This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. Great to have you with us for this Tuesday, February 4th edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Jennifer Kuiper, and the Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Today's Noon Business Hour, we will talk about how Facebook and Twitter could speed the spread of the coronavirus. Tesla surges, factory orders increase, and on Travel Tuesday, trying to stay healthy when traveling on an airplane. First, the coronavirus is creating challenges, not just for health professionals, but also for social media. We'll get that to that in a moment. And right now, the results of yesterday's Iowa caucuses are long overdue with far-reaching implications. Joining us is Mark Hamrick, Washington Bureau Chief for Bankrate.com. Mark, so how does it feel to watch an election, not get the results, and still not have them at noon the next day?
Hi, Jennifer. Great to be with you. Well, it feels like now the results of the Iowa caucuses are being streamed in a single season with results to be made available to us in successive days. But obviously this afternoon we expect to get the majority of these results about, I guess, 4 hours from now. The party has promised that. But this has been obviously an embarrassment and is not the first time that Iowa's had problems with its, some might say, antiquated caucuses system. And I think this will be something to watch in the future, whether they stick with this or whether they might go to something a little different, as most of us do, and that is vote at the polls.
The party was talking about it had something to do with an app and some coding error. Who investigates this?
Well, I think, first of all, it'll be between both state officials in Iowa and party officials. This is not what they wanted to do. They enjoy the status of the first in the nation's primary. And, we're getting into a situation here, Jennifer, over the next month where these events are going to come fast and furious. Just next week, we'll have the New Hampshire primary. Nevada is February 22nd. The 29th is South Carolina. March 3rd comes Super Tuesday. So, literally in a month's time, we're going to be blazing through this primary process, and Iowa is going to look quite tainted with all the time that the candidates have been spending there. This doesn't make them look good.
Something else that we have on the political scene tonight is the State of the Union address, the preview. Can you give us a preview of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So White House officials are branding the theme of this the Great American Comeback. And of course, in some ways, that might be addressing President Trump's own situation while he's looking to put the spotlight on the economy. Here we have a president who, it appears, will emerge victorious from the impeachment saga, which will only wind down tomorrow and making for high drama. House Speaker Pelosi will be sitting right behind him there during the speech this evening. The president will obviously be, in some ways, taking some victory laps with respect to the economy. He'll be touting what he calls the blue-collar boom, helping working families going forward. He'll look to emphasize ideas about lowering the cost of health care, as well as immigration and national security. Democrats this afternoon from both the House and Senate are going to make the point that they've already passed 11 bills on health care meant to address many of these problems, but yet this legislation has stopped in the Senate.
That is Mark Hamrick, Washington Bureau Chief with Bankrate.com. Thanks for joining us. Ahead, the challenge of controlling the myths about coronavirus. We've been talking about this. The coronavirus continues to spread in China, prompting fears around the world. And now social media are faced with the challenge of controlling false information about the infection. Let's talk with Shelley Palmer, host of the podcast Think About This with Shelley Palmer and Ross Martin. Visit thinkaboutthis.com.fm and be sure to follow Shelley on Twitter at thinkaboutthis. Shelley, how could Facebook and Twitter spread the, or how has it been spreading, if that's the case, the speed of the coronavirus? Any examples that you can give us?
Well, it's been actually spectacular. The problem is that no one exactly knows what the coronavirus is when it happens, because the coronavirus itself is in a family of viruses that are related to the common cold. And the incubation time is anywhere from 2 to 14 days. And so every time somebody gets a sniffle, they're now totally afraid because of mass media and social media that it's coronavirus or the coronavirus strain that is infecting the people in China. And so concerning the World Health Organization, it's almost an impossible situation to contain because people are really scared. One of the little known facts, or maybe people do know this, is that Google actually can determine when an area is going to come down with the flu, when a geographic area will be come down with the flu weeks ahead of the CDC, because people are searching for cold remedies and they're searching for symptoms. And so Google has a really good idea. And Facebook actually can find it earlier than that, because people constantly talk about how they feel. And so this is really problematic, because basically the symptoms are a cold until you figure out that it's much worse. I'm not quite sure that there is a solution, except to be very vigilant about what you're reading and not to panic. And I think the most important thing here is some leadership and a little bit of common sense. You know, if you don't live in an area that is known to be infected by coronavirus, the chances that it is a cold versus coronavirus, it's probably a cold. There just aren't that many instances outside of the known areas. Google's done a very, very good job of localizing that on their health section, and Facebook has done a pretty decent job of helping people check in when it is and it isn't. So, I mean, at the moment, the best I think everyone can do is to calm down a little bit and pay attention to the data that Google is giving with respect to the localization of the virus, and also the World Health Organization and the CDC. All those websites have incredibly good information on them, and that's where you should start. It's not where you should end. Don't tweet or post and then go check first.
How are Facebook and Twitter trying to tackle this? You were just talking a little bit about that, but there has been so much misinformation out there, especially we've heard, you know, with politics and some of the fake news that they say. But what are they doing in this case? Is it just simply monitoring what's moving out there?
Well, I think from a Twitter and Facebook perspective, they're doing what they can. But you can understand the scope and size of the problem. If you were to tweet, "I'm not feeling great today, I think it's coronavirus," exactly what are they supposed to do about that? You don't know whether you have it or not. You have a cold. Maybe you're being facetious. Maybe you're not. So the scope of this problem is insane. Again, coronavirus presents as a common cold until it gets worse. So, because, you know, people tend to ignore it. And by the way, just to keep the information as good as we can, people who are most likely to have a fatal case of coronavirus are people who are elderly, male, and of ill health to begin with, because it presents as a cold and you don't take care of it and you don't go seek medical assistance. So while Facebook and Twitter are doing the very best they can, again, there's no AI, there's no people, there isn't enough resources in the world. And also, you wouldn't know how to do it even if you were to try to program an AI. So three things you do: you check Google Health, you check the CDC, you check the World Health Organization, and you try to be a little, use a little bit of common sense about where you live and what the chances are that you would have contracted coronavirus. And, you know, when your friends on Facebook say things and retweet things you don't believe are true, call it out, because that's the best way you can help Facebook and Twitter.
Shelley Palmer, host of the podcast Think About This with Shelley Palmer and Ross Martin. Visit thinkaboutthis.fm or follow Shelley on Twitter at thinkaboutthis. Automaker Tesla's stock is the toast of Wall Street today. We'll find out why coming up.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Shares of Tesla are in overdrive today. Joining us with the latest is Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and former tech editor for the Today Show. Paul, you know, once upon a time, Tesla was not doing so well with big production problems. And then yesterday, the electric automaker saw its biggest one-year gain since May 2013. Why the 19% surge yesterday, 20% today?
Well, I think it's about 50-50. 50% of that surge, I think, is sort of like Dutch tulip sales, right, in the 1600s. Like, all of a sudden, everybody decided they're valuable, so they're going for it. And that's obviously the emotional component. But there is an underpinning of fact. And the other half of that, I think, is being pushed by real changes that most folks who don't pay close attention haven't noticed in Tesla's efficiencies, both in its production, how they're making their cars has gotten a lot more efficient. And then even more importantly, the efficiency of the batteries that drive those vehicles and the broadening of their base. In other words, they don't just make cars. A lot of folks think about the cars, obviously, but Tesla is moving into what they call power walls, which are home batteries for folks who want to be either off the grid or use the solar energy they generate. All these things are contributing. So a huge step forward in efficiency, both in how they build the cars and how well those cars work.
And I believe they have a gigafactory with Panasonic, a deal there. Is that helping them as well?
It is. But that's the thing. again, because people have taken their eye a little bit off the ball being the broader view of what Tesla makes. Most folks thought, okay, cars, are they doing well? Are they selling? And the answer is yes. But then people are saying, look, you know, it's in a niche market because, first of all, market auto sales of electric-only vehicles are still only 3% or maybe closer to 4% at this point of the entire market. So people say, oh, it's a niche player. But what Tesla did in its time, it bought time. It basically broadened their base. So they're coming out with that pickup. It's very exciting, very cool looking. But again, they brought into the Powerwall, the batteries. They're also teaming up with other companies, as you mentioned. So again, it's a broader story than most folks gave it credit for.
Do you think Tesla has caught the attention of Toyota and GM, any of the big three here?
Oh, it's in some ways, at least from this outside observer, a little sad. Yes, they caught the attention. And what they caught the attention of is a whole bunch of companies who are sort of flat-footed. There are 15 vehicles coming out this year that are full electric, but they don't look very good by comparison. Fiat, Honda, Nissan has had an electric for a while, but again, it's sort of a smaller niche. Clearly, obviously, Tesla's there, but BMW, all these folks are building electrics, Kia, and yet what they're going to have to struggle with is not just efficiencies in manufacturing, but again, customers now expect Tesla efficiency in their battery, and they won't necessarily get it yet in that competition. So Tesla definitely is ahead of the pack.
Paul Hawkman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show. Thanks for joining us. We'll check the markets when we come back. And later, one of the last things you want when you fly, getting sick on the plane.
News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Jennifer Kuiper. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Investors are rebounding from a coronavirus slump. We'll look at what's moving Wall Street. It's Travel Tuesday. We'll talk about ways to minimize your chances of getting sick on the plane. A new concept for Asian restaurant giant P.F. Chang. No tables. Now, news we're watching this afternoon. The candidates move on without the results of the Iowa Democratic caucus. WBBM Business, the markets are up today. The Dow right now is up about 446 points. The NASDAQ is up 180. The S&P 500 up 51. And the Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Speaking of Wall Street, time to check the market. Stocks right now are up. And joining us with the latest on what's moving Wall Street is Tim Griske, chief investment strategist for the Inverness Council in New York City. The marketplace way up today. What do you make of it?
Hi, Jennifer. Well, we're seeing a rally today in the markets. I don't know really why today is the big up day. We are in the middle of earnings season, and earnings are coming in fast and furious. But the big name overnight was actually Alphabet, which is the parent of Google, and it had soft revenues, and that stock is down today over 3%. So earnings, at least today, aren't the catalyst. But we have more earnings ahead of us. Always a volatile period, earnings season, and I'm sure we'll have ups and downs over the next week or so as the rest of the earnings come out.
Well, speaking of earnings, what do you think about the season so far? I mean, like as you mentioned, we have more coming out, but one we just talked about a short time ago, Tesla. Wow.
Well, Tesla isn't an earnings story, that's for sure. But it is a bit of a cult stock. They were certainly the first mover in luxury electric cars. And they continue to take market share in that segment, or really even dominate that segment. But they're not going to be alone in electric cars by any means. There are a lot of new electric cars coming out. You saw that in the Super Bowl ads from other companies. So Tesla is going to have a lot of competition out there. And this tends to be a very volatile stock, but it is a wow today. Huge volume, more than triple its normal volume of trading, and the stock is up over 18%. I would not chase this name. You can try to trade this name, but it's an extremely volatile and high-risk situation.
And Tim, you mentioned Alphabet as well, loses $1 trillion status here after the revenue miss. So what is it that Alphabet's doing wrong here?
Well, I don't think there was really anything wrong. There was actually a lot of good in Alphabet's release, primarily YouTube. where they have $15 billion in annual ad revenue now. That is a great growth story because it hasn't been monetized fully by any means. And then the cloud, which Google is very involved with, and that has at a $10 billion annual revenue run rate. So there's a lot to be said. Really, the weakness here was in their everyday standard search advertising business, the ads that pop up when you search things on the internet, on Google. And that was a bit soft. So that penalized the expectations for revenues here. I think Google today would be the place to put money, down 3% plus. This is a great long-term story involved in so many great businesses and so dominant. So that would be my certainly pick of the day.
Any others that you would recommend at this point?
Well, you know, there are a lot of names we like longer term. I'm not sure I'd buy into this, you know, big rally here, but, you know, who knows? There are some more defensive type names in healthcare. For now, I would stay away from the healthcare insurance companies. There's risk there, given the Democratic election, or the presidential election, and possible changes to healthcare, not only from the Democrats, but from the Republicans as well. But some of the more device-oriented companies, so Teleflex, which makes various low-technology devices, and a lot of them are almost, it's like a razor blade type business. They have to continuously be replaced like catheters. That is a great defensive company. And we probably think perhaps a takeout candidate at some point for a bigger player.
And Tim, one other area, factory orders increased.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, factory orders were up and above expectations. I think this follows a very strong ISM index, manufacturing ISM index, released yesterday, I think it was, which showed growth on the industrial side of our economy. The industrial side of our economy has been weak for quite some time. It's nice to see some positive economic cheers on the industrial side. That really gives hope to the market, and that's probably one reason why the market is up so much today.
Tim Griske, Chief Investment Strategist, Inverness Council, thanks for joining us. Coming up, Travel Tuesday. We'll look at the hidden culprits that can make you sick on a plane.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Nobody wants to get sick on vacation or even on a business trip, especially on a business trip. Let's talk about ways to minimize the risk on planes. And our guest is Cindy Richards, editor and in chief of TravelMom.com, a leading independent family travel website here in Chicago. Cindy, with flu and coronavirus worries, what are some recommendations for trying to stay healthy, especially on a plane?
Well, it's always a challenge, right? I used to always get sick every time I flew. And then I was on a plane about 5 years ago, and I saw this woman sitting next to me, and she pulled out these Clorox wipes, and she started, like, you know, cleaning everything. And I looked at her like, what, are you crazy? And then I thought, no, she's not crazy. I need to be doing that. And I started doing it, and I've never gotten sick since. So the answer is you really don't want to touch anything unless you've cleaned it. I always travel with Clorox wipes in my bag. And as soon as I sit down, I start wiping everything down, just like a crazy germaphobe. I wash the entertainment screen. I wash the tray tables. I wash the armrests. I even wash the belt buckle because, you know, people touch those, right? That's one of the things everybody touches on a plane.
What about those magazines?
Oh, my God. So I did a story about this, right? We have a story on TravelingMom.com about it. And one of the germiest things on an airplane is the in-flight magazine. And the reason is because everybody, right, they're slick pages. So what do? You lick your finger before you turn the page. That was like the biggest ooh factor I'd ever written about. It was like, ooh, I'll never touch those again.
How about one thing that made us chuckle was breathing, you mentioned. And, you know, you can't stop breathing.
It's really hard, you know. Go ahead.
Oh, and those vents, I mean, do you recommend not sticking them right over on your head?
So what I do is I turn them on so that they blow away from me, right? I was on a plane once and this guy sat down next to me and he was coughing and sneezing and, you know, snorting and he was terrible. And I thought, oh, God, I'm going to be sick. So I turned the vent on full blast and I blew it in his direction because I figured at least his germs were going someplace besides towards me.
One other thing, too, especially on long trips, staying hydrated is really important, isn't it?
Oh, it's so important because, you know, your mucous membranes dry out in your nose and your throat, even your eyes. And so you want to stay hydrated. And, you know, people think, oh, it's a good time to have a drink. Well, it's going to dry you out even faster. So you really just want to drink water, no coffee, no alcoholic beverages, drink a lot of water. And this is a tip I got from somebody a while ago that on really long, like international flights, I'm going next week and I'm going to do this, is you take a little Vaseline and you put it inside your nose. It feels a little gross, but it really does make a difference. It helps keep those membranes hydrated. And when they get really dried out, that's when the germs have a better chance of getting in.
Cindy, you mentioned you're traveling. Are you going to be wearing one of those masks?
You know, I haven't done that yet, but I'll tell you, I'm getting really tempted. I just might. We'll see.
And any other tips before we go?
Well, I think that the answer is just that you want to always wipe everything down. Don't touch anything. Don't use your fingers to touch things. If you're going to use the screen, the entertainment screen, use your knuckle. And then don't touch your face. Take the hand sanitizer, and anything you touch, use the hand sanitizer and use it often. Wash your hands as much as you can. If you use the bathroom, don't touch anything in the gross bathroom because, you know, they just don't have time to clean that stuff. They turn those planes around really fast these days.
Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of TravelingMom.com, a leading independent family travel website. Thanks for joining us. And join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. Still ahead, a new location for restaurant chain P.F. Chang's, but no tables and no chairs.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Order what you want at P.F. Chang's newest restaurant, but don't look for a table. It's for takeout only. Let's talk about the concept with Doug Roth, founder and president of Playground Hospitality here in Chicago. Doug, the benefits for P.F. Chang in offering a takeout only option, and why Chicago?
Well, interesting you should say that, Jennifer. Actually, in reading their PR piece, they said it really wasn't because of real estate prices at this point, but it was more in moving with the market and what the market wants. I have a different belief behind that.
And what is that?
My belief is, well, actually, I believe that, and I've sort of understood this for a while, that Chicago and some of the other major metropolitan areas that they're looking at, including New York and Washington, to do this 2,000 square foot model, has not really been the sweet spot for P.F. Chang's. They do better in smaller second and third tier cities. Too much competition here by players like Lettuce and Boca and other groups that have independent Asian restaurants.
So reduce some of that rent, reduce some of the overhead, and you have a slightly better chance? Is that the thinking here?
Well, that's their thinking, yes. And then you also have the issue today, obviously, with a very tight labor market. So if you can take that component of the both the front of the house away from the situation and keep the back of the house somewhat intact, but you've reduced the menu, you're obviously doing some cost saving. But again, I think that they're sort of playing in a game at this point where there's a heck of a lot of competition for the full-service restaurant, at least in this market and the other major cities in this country as well.
Is it just one restaurant here they're trying this with, or are there going to be a couple of locations or more than that?
Well, actually, they're maintaining four of their suburban locations at this point, which will be still their first full-service locations. And what I've read is that they're going to have about two more in Chicago at this point, and I think they're going to sort of feel it out from there.
If Chicago is not really the hot market for P.F. Chang's, what is it that they are succeeding in? Are they seeing growth in a different area of the business at this point?
Well, I think that they're seeing growth certainly in markets, as I mentioned before, that maybe the Indianapolis and we're looking at markets, the Minneapolis, markets that aren't necessarily quite as large as Chicago and don't really have those hometown favorites. Many of those markets don't have people that have been able to put together really that sort of generic. And again, I like the product, but it is somewhat formulated now. And as a result, I think people are looking for a little bit more intimate experience sometimes.
And thinking about restaurants and trying to get a handle on costs and being able to control some, I was looking for more. Are maybe with the takeouts being enabling themselves to focus a little on catering?
Good point. I think, once again, when you have that type of environment where you have sort of moved away from the guest experience, that you can focus on catering, which, as you know, is a very cost-effective and very high profit margin, especially when you're dealing with Asian as well. Your costs, your food costs, and your prime costs, that we call it in our business, are very favorable. So a good point. And I think the fact is that you'll see some increased value there as well.
Doug Roth, founder and president of Playground Hospitality here in Chicago, thanks for joining us. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!